Hi, this is Amherst Eclectic, and coming back onto a subject matter that I've kind of been handling over the past couple days, because it just keeps re-emerging in our society, unfortunately, in societies all across the world, unfortunately, but lately here in America, quite often. Is violence perpetuated by males, by men. And the toxic masculinity, the misogyny, the patriarchal society mores that come into play in America. And not just in America, but all the way across the world. And I kept questioning myself, like, why does this continually happen? I mean, I know I've grown up as a woman. I can look at the way men treat me, the way men treat women, children, even other men around them. And I know why these things are happening. Unfortunately, it's not funny. It's almost hilarious how much we ignore why these things are happening, and then try to blame everything else but toxic masculinity. And okay, what does that have to do with this podcast and sexuality? Well, it has to do a lot with that, because relationships between men and women, relationships between homosexual, male to male, and it even affects female lesbian to lesbian, because we all grow up in misogyny. And I've been on discussion boards, I've been in discussions with other people, I have etc. And the effects of misogyny, even on women, you know, sort of accepting the misogynistic ideas that they've grown up with and defending those ideas. And the biggest example of that would be, you know, if you look at on the Republican side of the gate, the women who are defending, they defend things that are basically against women, against themselves. They vote against themselves. They talk against themselves. They, you know, all of the things that, you know, you would want them to realize are going against their own equality in the society, they defend. So that's how women get, you know, affected by misogyny. It's just so much a part of their lives that they don't even see when they're defending something that goes directly against their own gender and against themselves as women. So we have all of these things that come into play, and it affects relationships hugely, hugely, hugely. You know, from what we've been seeing in the news way too much, women in intimate partnerships with men who are murdered by them, who are brutally beaten by them, who are brutally stalked, whatever. And then the children in those relationships are also killed and murdered and stalked. You know, this is toxic masculinity. Men who think that they should be the king of the castle, of their castle. I mean, isn't that the big thing? I'm the king of my castle. In other words, men want to be the rulers within their household. They can't do that outside their door. When they go to work, they are ruled over by other men. So when they come home, they want to be the king of the castle. So it's sort of the trickle-down theory, right? If you're being treated badly, then you're going to go home and find someone you can treat badly, right? Not right. It's not good. And it's really not the way to be. But that's what toxic masculinity in our society teaches. So it has everything to do with this podcast, what we're witnessing. And here in the last couple days, is it Tyrone Hall? I think it's his name. Yeah. The man who in Memphis, he's a African-American man who was beat up on, tormented, tortured, literally tortured physically by 5 African-American police officers. Now, here's the gist of this. Everyone keeps saying that police brutality is about white police brutality against people of color. Well, I've always said, that's not true. That's not true. I have dealt with it. Other people have dealt with it. Everyone in my life, I have seen deal with police brutality from men. Now, it's never happened from a female cop. Not in my life, ever. If there's ever been a female cop, black or white or any other, you know, Hispanic, no matter what, I have never had that kind of toxicity come from a female cop. Now, you're going to have them probably be a little more masculine, a little more tough, you know, female cops. But I've never had a bad experience thus far with a female cop. Now, I'm not saying they won't happen. Not every human being on the face of the planet is perfect. Somebody's going to screw up at some time, I'm sure. Show me that there is a few who are just as toxic. But overall, I'm telling you, and, you know, I don't say this to be conceited or, you know, or full of myself. I am an attractive female, always have been, tall, slim, in shape, attractive. Whenever I encounter a male cop, that always comes into play. Every single time. Every single time. I don't care if they're married or not. They end up flirting with me. They end up making innuendos at me. And I have to ignore that and act like I didn't hear that, or act like I didn't realize that's what they were doing, and stay on the straight and narrow and stay professional in a professional realm and relationship with that police officer, right? Even though they keep pushing it. I have been stalked by police officers who have decided that they wanted me. They wanted a relationship with me. And my refusal to acknowledge that, my refusal to go there and try to ignore and try to stay in a professional zone when I'm dealing with that, those kind of police officers, only made them more angry and only made them, I kept getting pulled over by a certain male police officer who was mad because I think he felt I jilted him, even though he was a married police officer, even though I was not interested whatsoever. Even if he would have been single, would have never been interested in him. And he kept pulling me over and giving me tickets, and I now cannot go into that city, that part of the city, that suburb. I can't go there. I it's somewhere I used to shop all the time. I used to go to the restaurants there. I frequented that area a lot. Now my business, my money does not go to that city because of a cop that they have in their city that I have to avoid. Because if I even step within that city, somehow he finds me every single time. Now, I have a different car now than I used to, so it's a little less likely to happen. But if I step out of that car and he sees me, that's it. He's going to know my car. He's going to be able to follow me around. He's going to find me, right? So, and you transfer license plates from, you know, one car to another. I didn't do that. I got totally new license plates for that very reason, so that he cannot find me right off. So I have a totally different car, totally different license plates. I had to go to that extent to get away from this guy. So I have seen what police can do. I have seen them be pretty rough. I've watched somebody get arrested that shouldn't have been arrested and manhandled. I mean, literally, brutally manhandled, thrown to the ground. That didn't need to happen. And, you know, kids were around watching this and just horrified. So I have seen police brutality. It goes too far sometimes. And then you have your police officers that aren't like that at all. They really handle things well. But that has to do with the person in from the very get-go. Who they are from the very get-go. Why are we hiring these guys who are going to be so brutal? Well, because a lot of people, they're having problems getting recruiting police nowadays. And I think they were already having problems before all this, police brutality stuff started coming up and becoming more part of the media. They were already having problems for years recruiting police officers. Now, even more so. So I think they take what they can get, and unfortunately, there are a lot of toxic males, and we're not talking the big guys who are, you know, masculine and strong. No, 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 no. Those guys get accepted. We're talking the little guys, the short guys, the guys who get bullied all the time. What I noticed from my high school days, from me growing up, the ones who went into police force were the ones that got bullied all the time. The ones that ended up being police officers are the ones that got bullied all the time. I actually had a guy that was always bullied say to me, once he became a police officer, now, you know, if I find those people who bully me and I pull them over, now I can, you know, I can get them back. I can take out my frustration for what they did to me and get them back. And that's the attitude. I think a lot of these guys who got bullied feel like they can, you know, reciprocate against the people who did it to them if they ever run into them. And I think that that's what we saw with this latest police brutality in Memphis. Five guys who have probably come out of that sort of situation, being bullied their whole lives, or not being the top echelon male that they feel they should be, and then they pick on other men. They pick on women. And I can just imagine what these five men have done before this happened. How many women have they harassed? How many other men have they harassed? How many people have they unlawfully given tickets to and or put people in jail? Or how many laws have these guys broken already in the time that they have been police officers before they did this? Because it takes somebody continually breaking a law, continually stepping over a boundary, right? Continually doing something that they shouldn't do before they can go this far. I mean, to have done what they did to this man. I did not watch the tape, but I've heard a lot of stories from people about it. And, you know, I can see that you'd have to cross the line many, many times before you could do something like these five men. I mean, they all stood around and didn't hold each other accountable and kept brutalizing this man for a traffic stop. Why are people dying when they get pulled over in their cars? It makes you not want to drive your car anymore, doesn't it? What if you get pulled over? You know, particularly if you're a person of color, particularly if you're a woman. Because trust me, as a woman, you're pretty vulnerable when five cops show up for a traffic citation. And I have had that happen. That guy who was stalking me, he would call, they call backup, because I think they're supposed to have a backup car to witness what happens. But then there's four or five cars around my car, and I'm in that car alone with a bunch of male cops around me. What am I going to do if they start doing something that they shouldn't do? I'm alone with four men, five men. How am I going to fight against that? And I have seen stories of women who've had this. There was a woman who got pulled over, came out of a bar and got arrested before she even got into her car. I can't even remember the reason. It was some bogus reason. And they took her back to the station and made her strip down in front of them. They were all around her in a circle. I mean, it's on camera. All these cops were standing around her in a circle, and they made her strip in front of them and did a whole, you know, search and the whole bit. She was a very beautiful woman that they had apparently seen, you know, on other weekends at this bar. And I think these five men decided that they just wanted to get her back and strip her and see her naked and see how far they could go with it. And they went too far. Trust me. And they, I can't remember all the things they did to her. I think they gave her some sort of drug, claiming that they were checking to see if she had taken some sort of drug. I can't even remember. But, oh, they were taking blood from her, and they stuck this needle in her, and this guy was particularly cruel about it. So, this guy had some sort of sexual fantasy about her, apparently, and wanted to be brutal to her. That was the story that came out. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. And she was all alone. Very beautiful girl. And we also just heard in the news about a girl in another city down in Louisiana who was at a bar and she asked for a ride home, I think, with these guys. And there was four guys in a car. Was it four or five guys in a car? Four guys in a car. Three of them were underage and shouldn't have even been at that bar. They were like 16, 17. And one of them was 23. Now, why is a 23-year-old hanging out with 16, 17-year-olds? That's another question we need to ask. And they were all men. They were African-American, mixed, you know, in Latin, and I think white, right? And they all got her in a car. And I guess she asked for a ride home. And because she had been drinking, and she had talked to these guys inside the bar. She probably thought they were decent guys. Once they got her in the car, two of them raped her. They left her on a road in the middle of nowhere. They didn't take her home. And then apparently the two other guys sat in the front seat and watched her being raped and allowed it to happen. Now, that's the story we're getting. They may have all raped her. We will never know. They probably all did rape her because now she's dead. They left her in the middle of a road, nowhere. They didn't even take her home. And she ended up hit by a car because she was drunk and didn't know where she was. And this was a very smart, beautiful girl who was in communications, you know, got great grades, was well known by everyone, loved. And they probably somehow knew her, but are saying that they didn't, right? That they didn't know her. But I'm sure they probably knew her. Because she was very popular, very gregarious. I guess was going to be, you know, going towards a career for being a reporter. And they left her in the middle of the road after they raped her. And only two of them are admitting to rape, but I'm pretty sure, I would guarantee you that they all raped her. Now, they have her body. They probably can check that. They can probably find semen and, you know, DNA. But that's just another example. Right? And it doesn't even go back to some of the other murders and rapes that we've seen men do, like the guy, the couple who were living in their van or truck or whatever, and, you know, they were in Idaho, and he murdered her while they were up there, and that became national news. So this is the kind of thing that you're seeing a lot of, is toxic masculinity. Huge, huge toxic masculinity. And how that affects our society and the things that happen in our society. And I have said for a long time, and I have said in the past two podcasts, that I don't think these are isolated incidences that are happening. I think that this is a product, a example of what our toxic masculinity, our patriarchal society, our misogyny that is inbred into our society is doing to the men, the boys, and even the women who are in this country, right? were just so accepting of it. It's, you know, generation after generation. I looked it up. I looked up stats. I looked up, you know, toxic masculinity stats. And I found a article, American Psychological Association. And it's called Harmful Masculinity and Violence. So, right away, I didn't even have to look very far to find something that supports what I've been thinking, right? Understanding the connection and the approaches to prevention. Early socialization of negative masculine ideas. Western culture defines specific characteristics to fit the patriarchal ideal masculine construct. The socialization of masculine ideals starts at a young age and defines ideal masculinity as related to toughness, stoicism, heterosexism, self-sufficient attitudes, and lack of emotional sensitivity. Boy, and of connectedness, right? Lack of connectedness. Boys learn to be men from men in their lives, from their own experiences navigating our social norms, and from the large social and cultural context. Boys live under intensified pressure to display gender-appropriate behaviors according to the ideals of the male code. Looking at the development of aggression throughout childhood, we know that not only do aggressive behaviors can emerge at an early age, they also tend to persist over time without early prevention intervention. The socialization of the male characteristics mentioned above all onset at an early age, making it a prime time period for prevention intervention. So as boys, it's the best time to stop toxic masculinity. The possibility of negative effects of harmful masculinity occurs when negative masculine ideals are upheld. Primary gender role socialization aims to uphold patriarchal codes by requiring men to achieve dominant and aggressive behaviors. The concept of gender roles is not cast as a biological phenomenon, but rather a psychological and sociological construct, set of ideas that are malleable to change. In other words, you know, it's not because you're grown a male. It's not because you are born a male. Excuse me. It's because the society that you grow up in has decided that because you are a male, this is how it should be. So just like people aren't born prejudiced, they're not born racist, they're taught to be racist. So boys are not born toxic. They're not born with toxic masculinity. They are taught toxic masculinity. And that can be changed, just like not being taught to be racist. Okay, just an example. Okay, the connection between masculine cultural and violence perpetuation. Next part of this article. In early childhood, violence and aggression are used to express emotions and distress. Over time, aggression in males shifts to asserting power over another. So, you know, early childhood aggression is both female and male, but at an early age, it shifts. And men are taught power over another, particularly when masculinity is threatened, right? Masculine ideals such as restriction of emotional expression and the pressure to conform to expectations of dominance and aggression may heighten the potential for boys to engage in general acts of violence, including, but not limited to, bullying, assault, and/or physical and verbal aggression. These are all taught actions. Okay. Joseph Peek, 1995, devised the masculine gender role strain paradigm, which identifies three strains resulting from current cultural discrepancies, dysfunctions, and traumas. Aggression can result when a man experiences stress deriving from self-perceived failure to live up to the masculine expectations. Discrepancy. This is called the discrepancy. Or when he maintains normative masculine expectations, which that is the dysfunction. Both may result in a man's expression of negative idealized characteristics of masculinity, such as violence towards others. Intimate partner violence, IPV, a prime example of dysfunction, reflects the feelings of distress males experience in situations that threaten their idealized masculine identity. In other words, what they think men should be like in a partner or a male-female dynamic. An annual report by the Violence Policy Center, 2017, When Men Murder Women, that's what it's called, uses recent data to show the effect IPV, intimate partner violence, penetrated by men has on women in the U.S. 1,686 murders included female victims and male perpetrators, and 93% of the victims were murdered by a male they knew. God. In addition, according to the World Health Organization in 2017, WHO, worldwide, 38% of murders of women are perpetuated by a male intimate partner. 38%! So add another 12%, and that would be half the murders of women in the world would be by male partners. So just take off the 12%. 38%, we're almost to 40%. So let's just round it up to 40% of the murders of women are by men who they know. Male partners. God. And that's not even taking into account the murders by men that they don't know. Okay? Stalkers. You know, people who just decide that they're going to rape somebody. You know. Oh my God. Alright. Also in the U.S., men represent more than 90% of the perpetrators of criminal violence and 78% of the victims. So 90% of criminal violence are men. They're the ones who do it. They're the ones who enact it. And 78% of those victims are other men. So what we saw in Memphis with the five police officers, African-American police officers, attacking, torturing, and killing another African-American man, who, by the way, was smaller and thinner and weaker than them. They said he was like 6'4", 6'6", but he was really thin. So he was weak, and they picked on him. So he was taller than them, but he was weak, and they got off on being able to pick on somebody I guess they felt should be able to defend himself because he was taller. Okay, those from minority populations are at an increased risk due to greater exposure to high-risk environments and less support when violence occurs. Understanding the connection between negative male socialization and violence calls us to support preventative strategies that counter the problematic normative pressures boys face, recognize gender-related social norms, and seek to change the way men view and express themselves, resulting in a shift of gender practice, including the use of violence. So those are the two things. Countering the problematic normative pressures boys face, and recognizing the social norms that see the way men view and express themselves, resulting in a shift of gender practices, including violence. Right? So those are the reasons that these things happen. Now, I'm going to continue reading this article and continue on our next podcast, on the rest of the podcast here, discussing why this is happening. I mean, it just keeps happening. People are dying because of toxic masculinity and because of the way that that is playing out in society. And it just keeps getting worse. It seems like it's escalating even more. Or maybe we're just seeing it more because we have social media. I don't know, but it seems to be escalating here as of late. We'll keep discussing this. Hi, Amherst Eclectic. And we are still on toxic masculinity. And in this section, we're going to try and talk more about what we can do to prevent toxic masculinity in our children, in our future children, and maybe somehow solve it in our present male society, not just in this country, but around the world. Perspectives have to change. Things are happening that are concerning. Again, we were talking, this podcast for me started after hearing about the 5 police officers, African-American police officers in Memphis, Tennessee, who brutally bullied, tortured, and then murdered a African-American man who, for a traffic stop. I mean, wow. It's just unbelievable to even say the words that there is a man who has now died because of a traffic stop at the hands of 5 other African-American men, which, you know, we all have been saying this was a white-black thing that kept happening. You know, white police officers doing this to African-American or people of color. Well, now we know, you know, color's not a factor. It's about police brutality. It's about, for me, toxic masculinity is what I've seen. And it's all these different stories that we're seeing in the news only prove that. So, okay. I was reading the article from the American Psychological Association or Society. Okay. So, the next section of the article is prevention in response to multiple risk factors. And it says, shifting away from negative masculine constructs to promoting a healthy healthy masculine identity in childhood can influence a ripple effect that prevents the expression of violence in adolescence and adulthood. So, shifting from a negative masculine construct to a healthy masculine identity in childhood can change things. For that, one must first address starting in childhood perpetrators, known risk factors, which may include exposure to violence at home, in relationships, media, and in the community. So all these violent video games, let's bring that one up. What is that doing to our boys? Well, could that be, you know, even why these men did what they did? You know, did they all grow up playing violent video games? Who knows? Poor family functioning. So, you know, this brings up other things as well. You know, and the reason that people are in poor family functions is because of poverty sometimes or not enough money. And that takes us back to, shouldn't we have a higher minimum wage? Shouldn't we have universal health care so people aren't having to, you know, go bankrupt trying to get health care? Shouldn't we have better retirement? You know, there's social constructs that lead to violence in males. Anger is really the root, I think, of all this male violence, right? Anger at, you know, them unfairly thinking that they should be at the top of the food chain. Men think that they should be at the top of the food chain, just because, well, that's just the way it's supposed to be, is the way they're thinking, right? Instead of equality. But yeah, so poor family functioning. The next one is lack of services addressing exposure to trauma and stress. Well, that takes us to universal health care. If we had universal health care, then there would be things within the society that would help to address exposure to trauma and stress, right? We'd have counseling, we'd have psychologists, we'd have, you know, some sort of programs that would help in those areas if it was all covered under universal healthcare. And I cannot state that more strongly. Other countries, why isn't this not happening in other countries? Because they have universal healthcare that covers all this, that looks at all this and then tackles it. They look at the things that are happening in their societies and tackle them. Why don't we have a bunch of men going out and being mass shooters? Because that's the other thing that's happening, is that all these mass shooters are male in our country. And why is that a phenomenon here in this country? Other than the fact that the gun manufacturers and the government won't regulate the gun manufacturers. I mean, that's a big part of it. But the other part of it is that it's being tackled. You know, the societal things in society are being tackled in these other parts of the world. And that's why they don't have a bunch of people doing mass shootings, because they're not, you know, losing their minds, because they get healthcare coverage that takes care of counseling, takes care of psychologists, takes care of everything that needs to be done to help people who are going through those kind of stresses. So the lack of services addressing exposure to trauma and stress, right? We don't help our veterans enough when they come back from war. And then what are they going to do? They're unleashed in our society, right? Okay. Social rejection among peers, which I think is the biggest thing that we've seen with the shooters, the mass shooters, the young mass shooters that go back to their schools and shoot up their schools, or the men who go back to where they work and shoot up where they work. Social rejection among peers. If there's one thing that we need to do more in workplaces and in schools, is to keep bullying from happening. Keep bullying from happening. Okay. Poor behavioral control, overly sexualized attitudes and behaviors. So, poor behavioral control, in other words, when someone's going off the rails, not doing what they're supposed to do as behavior-wise, we should address that. Kids in the schools, people at the workplace, whatever, it should be addressed. Again, back to universal health care. If those sort of things were covered under universal health care, we wouldn't be having these problems. I mean, it's more than one thing that's happening. It's toxic masculinity. It's that the society that we live in here in America is not, we don't take care of each other. We're not taking care of each other. Universal healthcare would solve a lot of those problems, right? And the last here is social norms condoning male dominance and violence, right? So all of those things that, you know, that promote male violence, we need to change that. We need to socially look at what's happening and change what is going on with our boys and with our men, and change it. And again, I could say that goes back to universal health care, you know, giving them the counseling and maybe even a psychologist to help them to change. Okay, so examples of prevention strategies may include, now this is the article, this is not my opinions, but educate parents on the negative consequences of physical punishment and humiliation techniques on children. I have never ever thought that spanking or physical abuse towards children, you know, in order to, you know, say that they're wrong about something. You don't have to touch a child to get them to realize that what they've done is wrong. Take away privileges. Nowadays, you can just take away their video games, take away their phones, you know, take away their privilege to go to a party, you know, take away their privilege to go to an event, you know, spring that on them. You know, say to them, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're not going to the homecoming dance. You're not going to the party that your friends are having. You're not going to whatever social event is something that they're craving. They can't go. You know, trust me, if they don't get to do something socially that is going to affect them overall at school, they're going to change their attitude about what they should be doing at home or what they should be doing at school. They're going to change that attitude. You take away money, you know, allowances. Well, then you're not going to get your allowance this month. So that means you can't go out with your friends because you won't be able to afford it because your allowance is what pays for that. You know, there's lots of things you can do. You don't have to touch a child. Ever. Ever. I mean, think about what they do in workplaces. You know, they're not going around beating their employees to get them to do what they want them to do. They're taking away something, just socially being acceptable in the workplace as being the person who is achieving, you know, or who's getting the bonus or who's getting whatever. You don't have to touch your employees to get them to come to work every day, do what they're supposed to do, do the work to get their paycheck. Same thing with a child. You don't have to touch a child. You know, there are ways to motivate people beyond that. And there are actually much better ways to do it. And you're going to come out with a much, a child who's going to be able to navigate living in the real world better. Okay. The next one is educate parents to create safe, nurturing, healthy environments and relationships that prevent modeling violence to children. And teach them to express and regulate their emotions. ACT Raising Safe Kids. That's a reference on here. ACT Raising Safe Kids. So yeah, if you create a safe home environment where you're not physically harming your children, and relationships, you know, your relationships will be better if you do that. And you prevent modeling violence to your children as an answer, or quit using violence. I mean, even smacking your kid's hand, it's violent. You know, there are ways to get kids to do things. You don't have to touch them again, right? Teach them to express and regulate their emotions. And that goes back to, you know, you may need to take them to counseling if you can't handle that, right? Okay, identify and treat psychological distress precipitated by gender role socialization. So if you see something distressful in your kids that is particularly your boys, but also your girls, because misogyny touches both male and female. If you see something that's distressing them psychologically and it's precipitated by gender role socializations, step in, stop it, make a change. You know, give them another answer, right? Promote healthy relationship skills that decrease adolescents' acceptance of traditional gender role norms and dating violence. In other words, you know, find another answer so that they're not, you know, falling into traditional gender role norms and dating violence. I mean, oh, another story, the story about the girl in Louisiana who was who died. There's four boys that took her into a car and raped her and thought that that was okay. What were their parents teaching them? You know, that's dating violence at the peak. And then they just left her in the middle of nowhere out on a country road. What? Those four boys have absolutely no respect for women at all. Or themselves. What kind of violence and behavior have they been witnessing their whole life from their parents? It's usually from the parents, always. Or they may, you know, have grown up in a violent, you know, foster care system. You know, that's another thing that we need to tackle. All the kids that are in foster care and the people who take advantage of them, and our government allows that to happen. I can't remember what, it was a really high percentage of kids in foster care who experience pedophilia, sexual violence. So what are we doing about that? you know, we're just throwing kids to a bunch of pedophiles or throwing them into situations where they're used as little mini slaves for people. And then you pay those people to take care of the kids as they're abusing them. I mean, what does that say? That's another area that needs to be addressed. Okay. Create marketing campaigns designed to modify social and cultural norms that endorse unhealthy male codes and consequence violence. So, video games. Violent video games. Violent movies. Ad campaigns that would, you know, go against that. That would talk about how those things are wrong and you shouldn't be letting your kids watch them. Maybe if we brought that information out more every day on commercials where parents are watching them, maybe somebody might say, oh, I didn't think about this. Maybe I shouldn't be letting my kid play that video game. Maybe I shouldn't let my kid talk that way. Maybe I shouldn't let my boys treat my girls that way. Maybe I shouldn't let my husband teach my son to do those things. Maybe I, as a father, shouldn't be doing this to my sons or my daughters, etc. Okay, have multi-level programs that positively integrate boys and men into society in healthy, positive ways. Well, that just speaks for itself, right? You have all these programs created, which, again, that could come back to universal healthcare, creating these societal things that help to shift the paradigm on the way that men and boys are interacting in our society in toxic ways, right? Change how they see what they're doing. Make them move in a different direction. Not make them, but encourage them to move in a different direction. Show them, let them realize that the things that they're doing are wrong. And that is a big thing that could be done. You know, workplaces could require that men, even women, or that everyone in the workplace are required to take these courses or to participate in these exercises, make it a requirement. And you know, that teaches that toxic masculinity is not the way to go. That it's a cancer in our society. And I've said this on other podcasts. I think misogyny, patriarchy, whatever you want to call it, toxic masculinity is a cancer in our society, particularly in the American society. I mean, look at everything that's happening. Or are we seeing more of this in the American society? Is it being reported more in the American society because we are a free country who is more open to freedom of speech, freedom of the press? We're just basically more, you know, open and honest about what's going on. We're not, the government doesn't hold us back from saying things as happens in other countries. Is that why we're seeing it more here? Because that's, you know, we're talking about it more. So that's another question, you know, is that why it's more open? But, you know, back to what happened to this young man in Memphis who died. You know, you cannot say that this is not toxic masculinity. You cannot say that this isn't something that has to do with within the police organization. And I know, you know, everybody's like, oh, don't be so negative about police. They help us, blah, blah, blah. These police didn't help this man. They murdered him. Five of them together. And it's not the first time it's happened. George Floyd is another national incident. I mean, we could go on. And there's been women who have been brutally treated and murdered. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, that woman, she was, I think she was a of Latin descent, the beautiful woman who got, you know, surrounded by five officers and they stripped her down to, you know, nude. You know, it was all their little fantasy. It was all their little, you know, they had been watching her and they wanted to see her naked. And, you know, the guy who was, you know, sticking the needle in her arm, you know, he was the main culprit of it all. So he was like, you know, this is what also happens in with toxic masculinity. There's a ringleader and there's all these other guys. And usually the ringleader is probably someone that they look up to or want to be like, or he gets all the women or whatever, right? And then they follow him because he's the top echelon, you know, man in that group, in the toxic masculinity world. And this is how I've seen it happen. You know, there's always this guy or a couple guys who are the ringleaders, and then all these guys just follow like they have a freaking ring in their nose and a rope on that ring. It's crazy. I've never been that way. I've never been a follower that way, right? I might get along to go along sometimes, but if it doesn't feel right, if I see something wrong going on, I'm not going to be following. Other people might follow along, and I'm the one standing back going, nope, that's okay. And then what happens? Well, those, you know, ringleaders don't like me, because then people turn around, well, you know what, she's kind of right. I don't think I should be doing this. And then they start pulling away from that ringleader, right? Well, the ringleaders in the male world are usually the taller, bigger, stronger guys. So if the weaker, shorter guys try to do what I do, turn around and walk away, then they're going to physically beat them up. They're going to, you know, harass them. They're getting these bigger ringleaders, right? So that men are taught, don't mess with the ringleaders because you're going to end up being harmed. Five guys in Memphis with a guy who was 6 foot, I don't know what, you know, he's really tall, but really thin and not very, you know, strong. They just harassed. I mean, I can't even imagine what that poor guy went through. Oh my God. I don't want to watch the video. There have been blips on the news. They are reluctantly making me watch it, and I have to change channel right away. I don't want to watch it. I know what happened to that guy, and it's horrible. I don't need to see it, right? Now, I know that the reason they released the video is so that there weren't any conspiracy theories flying around out there and people making things up of what happened but didn't happen, right? They wanted the video to be released so that everyone could see it and no one could say this happened and lie, you know, and basically say things that didn't happen. I don't need to watch it. I don't need to watch it. Maybe the people, you know, they're trying to stop all the lies and conspiracies that might come out of this, right? It's brutal, but at least people know the truth. If they, you know, have to watch it to see that truth, that's up to them. I don't need to. But we have to question what's happening within the police force that this was allowed. This wasn't just one guy who did it. There were five men, and apparently at different portions of the video, they were standing around laughing while the guy was laying there dying. Tying their shoes, where's the keys to my car? And he's laying on the ground dying. He eventually died at the hospital, but if they had got him to the hospital sooner, but why would they call the And then now the ambulance, the fire department, all the people who showed up, they're on suspension until they find out, did they wait too long? Did they also go along with this? And apparently all men. Did they also go along with this? Did it all, you know, is there a ringleader within that police department, right? The head ringleader that everybody follows, you know? And did everybody kind of go along with it because they're afraid of that one person I mean, it's so screwed up. It's so screwed up. So now they're saying that those people could have helped him and maybe he would have lived if they'd got him in sooner. It's just horrible. It's horrible. So we have to look at not only the toxic masculinity within our society that is making this happen, but also the toxic masculinity within police, the police departments. All across this country. This has happened far too many times. It continues to happen. And I think the reason, you know, they were afraid to release this video because they were afraid of riots and things that could happen in each city and protests. And this time it didn't happen. They didn't get the violent protests, the riots, because maybe because they released the video. You know, and maybe because it was talked about a little bit more before they released the video. I don't know. Or maybe people are just tired of it happening over and over. And they just don't see any results with no matter what they say. No matter what they do. I mean, we had Black Lives Matter protests that came out of George Floyd and what happened to him. It's just, it's fatigue. People are tired of it happening over and over and over again. And then add on to that, watching women who are getting, you know, murdered by their partners and police who stopped people and then just let them go and let these, you know, violent male partners just, you know, they call the police, they report them. They come and then they walk away from it and say, well, you know, the situation's settled. They're talking now. And then the guy murders the woman. Or, you know, the same thing that happened with the girl in Louisiana. You know, four guys who, you know, just raped her and left her in the middle of the road. That's not something new. It happens over and over. Or the guy who just walked into a dorm room, walked into a college house in Idaho of a woman that he'd been stalking and then stabs four people and kills them. And you know, this just keeps happening. Or all of the, you know, mass shootings that just keep happening and nobody's doing anything to change this narrative. People are just fatigued with, okay, are we just going to keep allowing all of these incidences to happen and we're not going to do anything to change it? We're not going to change laws. We're not going to change gun policies. We're not going to change the way the police are trained. We're not going to change who is brought in to be police officers. We're not going to look at that and look at the dynamic of why this keeps happening. People are fatigued and tired of asking those questions. When is something going to be done? Do something. Enough is enough. How many times do we have to say it? Gun laws, gun control. Defund the police was not about defunding the police. Defund the police was about not taking money away from the police. What it was talking about originally was taking some of the money within the police, instead of hiring more police officers, hire mental health professionals, hire domestic violence professionals, hire people to show up on the scene so that something like this doesn't happen. Right? If you're having some sort of mental health issue, or if you're having some sort of domestic violence issue, have a professional who understands those things rather than a police officer. So it's not saying defund the police. It's reallocating the money to another area so that they can call a mental health professional to come rather than having to be a police officer who's not trained in any of those areas and has to deal with it on their own. That's a lot of stress. There are other ways to do this. Quit, you know, rallying up against and not really knowing what's going on. Like, say, when people say defund the police, research it before you say, wait a minute, what's that about? I don't know. What do you think? How do you think we can solve these problems? Let me know.